Now, I'm mentioning that because what we see is that the church developed a very important awareness, home birth. Many people thought of that as the 60s developed. The church was so far ahead that when I have mentioned it, it is like saying people who thought they were at the cutting edge of liberation in the 60s didn't realize that the church from the 30s and 40s and 50s had already given serious thought to these things. We wanted to be sure, and Mr. Armstrong wanted to be sure that home economics focused on health. He became himself health conscious in the 1920s and 30s, as you will remember from volume one of the autobiography. It is something to think about that you had a church and a college that in its small way was pioneering in any number of areas that later passed to others. That is, it ceased to be a need on our part. On the other hand, we never quit being aware of these things, although there was a tendency to abandon in the early 1970s under the administration of Garner Ted Armstrong, to abandon the sense of being physically aware, mentally aware, of the things that we could do to ourselves. We did not know. We sensed that something was wrong with smoking. We tackled the problem from a spiritual point of view. While many churches had gone in the direction of encouraging smoking, we did not. I, in the early 1960s, as a result of Jay Kiefer, a longtime friend, a book dealer, I got acquainted with him in 1948 when they were still on the East Coast. That's a separate matter. But Jay Kiefer introduced me to the Society of Biblical Literature. I have since been in many societies, meetings. The greatest smoking group I have ever met outside of the Australians were the theologians. I'll tell you, there was hardly a theologian who wasn't a smoker. And many of them, of course, were Lutheran, because that represented the Lutheran. The non-Catholic community was Lutheran in Europe, and they impacted ourselves over here. My wife has a comment.
I remember when I was a Lutheran church, I ministered very much in smoking cigarettes, and someone, I think, kind of cautioned him about doing that so much. And he said, well, that's a part of my Christian freedom.
Ooh. That argument sounds familiar.
Yes. Yeah. Now, we had people who went to extremes. They came among us, and they didn't know how to handle things always wisely. And we had students who came in the 60s and early 70s who had already lived the life of the 60s in their home, and we didn't know how much they were bringing with them. Mm-hmm. There was a certain young man whom I found a very competent young man. He was married, and he invited me to, well, he didn't say our house or our home or our apartment. He said, we'd like to have you come to our pad. And I did. And that's what it was. It was a pad. Now, I'll let you think of what it might have looked like. Let's say, there were people who became rigid for food. There were people who were ultra-liberal and had picked up in their teenage, young teenagers, all the things of the 60s. And these worked together, and ferment was without any question in the church. Some of you who know the early 1970s know what kind of a crisis was building from 70, we publicly knew something had happened from 71 to 74 in that time frame, and it just kept going on and on until it was resolved by about 1981, then it quieted down. It was essentially a 10-year period from 71 to 81, the like of which was not from 47 till then. I am not choosing to say some things about the crises we had in the early years because they're basically written in the autobiography. But there was one kind of crisis that I do not think we ever had seriously after the first decade of the church, from 40, as a college, 47 to 57. But I don't want to say it ended at 57, but let's say the first decade, and it could, it went on even later on rare occasions. It probably, I could say it probably lasted. It could have been even the first 20 years from 47 to 67, but it was already over, I would say, within that period. We had, as one of the most serious problems to deal with, demon possession. It was an ongoing problem of immense proportion. In fact, one of the faculty members clearly, I will quote her so you don't think that I am putting it out of my own. She was the teacher of English. She sat across, she was at her desk, and I found I could communicate with her as a teacher. She was a good teacher of English. I don't think Mr. Armstrong could have found a better one. He didn't know Lucy Martin could teach English at the time that well. And she said, I am a spirit. And she knew when we were praying about the problem. Because she came one Monday and showed welts on her body. And she said, you have been praying this weekend. And we were fasting and praying because she had quite an influence in that first year. She didn't last more than 1 year. The devil tried to destroy the work that was being done. And Mr. Armstrong had to deal with these things. And I would say many late ministers who came in the later 60s and 70s never had the experience that we had in those first 10 to 20 years. There was hardly a week that didn't go by that we had to deal with another problem. Strangers would come in, and one was a woman. I had her in the office. I sensed, I will not tell you how long I had to learn about these things, but I sensed what the problem was. And I learned how to get the potential spirit to respond in such a way that they gave away what they were. They would always blame God for something. Always blame Him. And I got this woman to acknowledge it where I didn't, you know, I say, well, you are this or you are that. The answer could be, I'm not. You're accusing, you know, you don't approach it that way. I had to be sure that I could say what I was dealing with and that Spirit knew that I knew. And this was an unusual case. This spirit was later picked up by the police. We had to call her, and she recovered, and I went down more than one occasion to talk to her. And the first time I ever was in a mental institution for the nonviolent. But it ended like this, that I said, that's what spirits say, demons who've rebelled against God. And then she was trying to act like a human being up to this point. Then a strange smile came over the face. And I still remember this conversation. Her comment was, very clever. Very clever. So now you know who I am. See, I learned that spirits can deny. Sometimes they don't, but you never know. We had another case that I had to use the same technique, but not verbally. I had to do it physically. It was a child, Big Sandy, but it's the kind of problem we had, that had become possessed approximately at age, let's call it five or six, but I think it was around six. And that demon would not talk. And I couldn't get it to talk. The parents couldn't. No other minister could. Well, ultimately, Kenneth Swisher and I solved the problem for others. We dealt with the spirit. God had to take care of that, and the Father helped. But we had to get that child to talk so that we could reach, that is, we had to get the voice, the spirit there to talk, and know that the Father could tell how to deal with the child. That child absolutely would say nothing. Now, what the child wanted to say, I have no idea, but the spirit would say nothing. I'll understand the table here, it's quite right. I was fairly close to the child, and the child had one, you know, you put one knee over the other. And I reached down. Mr. Hopkinson, excuse me for using you as an example. I reached down, and I struck the child here. And the foot moved. And the spirit had the experience of something happening, just like your foot moved. Something happening in the body that the spirit couldn't control. It was not aware that this happens. Because if I want to stop it, you know, when you strike somebody just below the knee, when you have your legs crossed. And that spirit uttered a word. And then I challenged it. And the Spirit then started to talk. For the first time, I just simply said, I know, and you yourself know, that you can speak if you want to because you did. Well, now, of course, the cover was blown, so to speak. And we had to deal with things like this. Not every problem. The one problem that we wished we had been able to solve was a woman. She moved about just like a snake moves about. I mean, there was a serious spirit there. And the tragedy is she had a husband who was a chemist, and he knew chemistry, but he didn't know the realm of spirits. And he liked the personality he was living with. And there's nothing we could do for him, because he didn't want that changed. We know there was a spirit there, because the spirit responded, but that was one we didn't solve. In his wife, yeah, he didn't know what she really was like, and that's what it. Anyway, of all the problems we had, the monetary problems weighed down on Mr. Armstrong the most, but we all pitched in for these others, the perennial, the monthly, almost the weekly problems. And there were all sorts of people who were coming off the street from who knows how many great distances, and some were just local. It was as if the demons were being sent by a devil to upset, to take up our time, to try to get into individuals. And Mr. Hopkinson has a comment.
I remember walking down Green Street, and a man came towards me, and he was gibbering and gesticulating. And I moved past onto the road, so the car between me and him. And this is just after I arrived. Mm-hmm. It would be somewhere like November, December of 1965.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it in my life.
There were astounding things. I'm not even beginning to tell you how many problems we had on campus. We had at the Feast of Tabernacles. Do you know the history of a certain woman who was a nurse and helped in so many ways for years on the campus here? I've not named the name now for some time because that was the case before she came to Big Sandy. She had wanted to be converted, and the Spirit said at a meeting, "Let me in," and she did. And he got possession. And the Spirit was cast out by Mr. Armstrong. So I won't go into that. But she knew what was happening. She heard what the Spirit was saying. And by the way, that little boy that I mentioned graduated from Ambassador. He's the same person, just some problem. He didn't know how to say no, I guess, and didn't know what the voice may have been suggesting to him. But this lady helped me deal with the most serious problem, and I have told the story in a small group recently, without identifying the lady, who's still a member of God's church. A student had become possessed of some legion. At least the speaker represented, there was every evidence, because when the speaker was not in charge, there were many voices, each one ridiculing the other, for their, shall I call it, the ugliness. And this was a most awful case that took all night. And I won't tell you the background. We had to bring the father here. He flew in, then he had to go back, and we had to send this girl up to his care. As Seventh-day Adventist background, she behaved in such a way she had never been corrected by her parents, so she had never made a mistake. So you know what the mistake was. Not having your eyes open to see the problem. Whenever, she always got her way. And in this case, something happened. She didn't get her way, and she simply lost her emotional control, and the spirits got control. But this woman that I mentioned, the Mr. Armstrong, cast the demon out of at Big Sandy, who got it in a Pentecostal meeting, she proved to be reliable. Wasn't any question. Proved to be reliable. How do you send up somebody, girl, now college age, with a minister without having, should have, a woman along? Because this was a long drive to Central California, and you would use the restroom from time to time. And how were you going to see that this person was controllable? Suppose she would use the restroom and not come out. It happened to be that this lady of whom I refer to was there, and she saw and understood it completely. And I, the minister, knew what his responsibility was, but I couldn't take the time to go, and we needed a woman along. I said to this lady that I am giving you my authority as a minister to be in charge for this trip, to deal with this question as you have to, as any minister would deal with a spirit. And she understood that it was for this occasion. She wasn't being commissioned for some something else. And she said, yes, she understood. And then she talked to the spirit and asked the spirit, now, do you understand that I have that authority? Yes, that was clear. That was clear. Because that legion knew that I had authority. This happened in our home, by the way. That was some night. That woman behaved in a very responsible manner, and nothing went wrong. The girl ultimately, at some near point in time, had the spirits, because we had commanded, I wasn't the only one, to have them leave, and they did. She returned to normalcy, returned to the church. It was wise not to bring her back to Ambassador College. She later was in the chorale group and talked normally and knew that something had happened. Yes? Mr. Thompson is asking the question.
She had legions. She had different spirits within her that argued. Is it like people today when they say they have multiple personalities?
No. Don't. We had I would just simply end the conversation here on that one, because I would say this. There may be multiple personalities when there are spirits present. This girl had them. But multiple personalities are not always spirits. We have the case of one of the rapists who used the multiple personality argument, who was knowledgeable about psychology, to try to defeat the court and make it appear that he was insane. And he was acting the part. So let me say, multiple personalities may, but there are humans who can cleverly behave in a manner where that can be demonstrated. It was like this. This person always responded in the, he wasn't aware what the psychiatrists for the court were after. But he was two personalities when this psychiatrist talked, three personalities when this one, see, one when that one, and the psychiatrists began to see that this person was trying to appear to be whatever the psychiatrist was trying to expect him to be. Not that there were, you know, just two or just three or whatever. And the jury and the court decided that indeed this man was posing. He was three when you wanted to see three. He was two when you wanted to see two. You know, that kind of thing. So I would say that is open to consideration of more than one kind of problem. Serious problem. Yes, Ron Guisado is speaking.
I'm wondering, what is it a spirit's trying to prove by dealing with, like, a little child and taking over its body? Is it trying to experiment? Because obviously it was surprised to see that the leg would move automatically. Was it trying to accomplish?
Well, all I can say is that a minister no longer in our fellowship once asked a spirit in my presence, it was a problem that he was dealing with, and he asked me to sit in on it. And the spirit said, this was a student, a girl, I would warn you just to be aware of the fact that very often women, more than men, are involved in this. If you know what spiritism is, you will discover how many women are involved with spiritism in a way that men are doubters. There are some men who are, but the vast majority that we had to deal with were women. Now, the statement was, why are you here in this person? And the answer was, I was sent to destroy this institution. Now, if they can't destroy an institution, they'd like to destroy the human being in some way. There may be any number of reasons, but that's the real reason is they feared the judgment, and they saw that God was at work. There are other reasons in prominent personalities where, indeed, the devil is simply playing a role that God has allowed in working through political figures. I brought Vanity Fair. I got this at the charity in the Sunland Mall. This cost 25 cents. You know, I don't know what the... $3.95. Book review. A remarkable book review. What's it late? Yeah. That must be coming in this area. Here we are. It's later in the sequence. Hitler's Pope by John Cornwell. The footnote, excerpted from Hitler's Pope, : The Secret History of Pius XII, by John Cornwell, to be published, this is October 1999 issue of Vanity Fair, to be published this month by Viking, copyrighted 1999 by the author. This man started to study the records because he was sure
that there were false accusations being made against Pius the XII with respect to those who were anti-German, those who were pro-Jewish, and so forth, you know, this kind of thing. And he was astonished at what he found. This is, I read it all to my wife, sometimes she reads to me. This is the most remarkable summary, and I wanted to bring it to your attention because, if need be, you might want the book. If you find a used copy, it's this cover, October 1999. And it would well be worth it. I'm going to see if I find another copy there to get it, although I can duplicate this, but sometimes it's easier, just cheaper to do it this way, you know, for something like 10, 15 pages of copy. At 18 cents, you can't go wrong. It is an astonishing thing. But the interesting thing is, if you want to ask the question about men, then what you find is that the possession by spirits, and I'm not making any statement with respect to Pius the XII, I'm making a broader statement with respect to the political realm. Men in high places are often possessed of demons, a demon, judges, undoubtedly in some of these wicked courts, and in some cases, very possibly, the devil himself takes action. It would be difficult to see that anyone other than Satan had, at one point, possessed Hitler. When he describes himself in writing to Neville Chamberlain as having fallen from heaven. You. Yes, he has fallen from heaven. Yes. Or no. It was said through him about him. The him who was speaking was not a normal man. Anyway, I would like you at least to know that this was one of the great problems that most ministers early in the church were conscious of and were aware of, and we have noted to what extent that has had dropped down more and more because the work simply couldn't be stopped that way. There were other ways available. Mr. Scott.
Well, the thought occurred to me, for instance, the case of Adolf Hitler, is that times he expressed definitely the attitudes of a demon or Satan himself, especially when he was up before a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But at times he was a very charming man.
He was what?
Charming man.
Yes, yes.
Well, in private life.
Yes.
Is it possible, I've often thought of, wondered about this with people, because I've known certain people who have had possession at times, but is it possible that a demon or demons, or even Satan himself, can influence somebody without possessing the individual?
I mean, that's regularly the case.
The normal situation.
Yeah, that's true. With the broadcasting, does, you know, really
can spirits come and go?
That's my question.
Yes. Yes. If you ever heard Pentecostal ministers tell you on a radio or TV program, I heard it on radio, how wonderful Christ has been, because through the minister, the Pentecostal minister, spirits are being cast out. And then they read the letter. You cast out a spirit from me when I attended your camp meeting and so-and-so. And then when I attended your camp meeting and so-and-so, you cast out the spirits. And I'm so glad now. And it was, I heard this over and over again. And it wasn't, the man wasn't making these things up. He was simply reading these letters. And they didn't dream what the situation was. That is, to fool the people, the demons can come and go if they want to. Now, I will tell you, if you have any doubt, anybody, about the personality of Hitler, you should read William Shirer's work. William Shirer said there were three Hitlers. Now, don't misunderstand. There was the Hitler who could be charming at tea, the Austrian from Braunau. And then he said, there was the Hitler with whom I rode in a car en route to his speech. And it seemed he was so dull and his eyes were glazed over. And I said to myself, William Shirer writes, what do the Germans see in this man? And then he began to speak after he had gotten to the stage. And William Shirer said, and suddenly he became larger than life. And you know, Hitler was not a tall person. But he designed the podium in such a way that it was high above the ground, but low on the stage, so that he seemed to tower. It's called psychology. And would he speak? If you've ever heard him, as they used to broadcast it. So there are many things on that topic that we learn from experience and also in reading history. And we didn't always perceive everything clearly. We misunderstood. And I will say, in some cases, I thought it was a spirit, but in fact the spirit wasn't answering. The person was mentally deficient in terms of nutrition and health. And simply was responding in the way I was asking the question, because I was puzzled what the problem was. So there can be nutritional deficiencies. I won't explain further, because we did deal with that. And that's clearly what it was. There, some things are now known that Jesus didn't discuss, because medicine was, they didn't know how to deal with some problems. I've been surprised to what extent sometimes people, once the medicine has been introduced, the body calms down. And the reason the problem arose is the person was emotionally under stress. And once the mind was not under stress, interestingly, the spirit was gone. Of course, we did ask that the spirit should go. But it is apparently, in some cases, this was not a long-term problem. This was something that just happened, let's say, only days or hours before. So we have learned that men also have learned, humans have, how to change the emotional response of a person and body chemistry in such a way that it appears that spirits never did have the same control in some ways that they did in others, and there are different levels of possession. I've learned that. A woman who could say, there is a spirit in here, but I'm in control now, but I don't know how to control it when that spirit decides to take over.
Free will,
I can only say that she couldn't resist on the basis of what she was. Now, if you want the answer, let me then finish the thought. She came to be demon-possessed after we prayed. Now, we had already dealt with her as with a demon problem. And she went out of state and then was returning in her right mind. She was picked up at the other end as a mental case. She was in her right mind. And what happened was, she was on a bus, Las Vegas, on the way here, and at the regular stop, now you can get out and have stretch your legs, that's all right, sure it is. Use the restroom, that's all right, sure it is. Get a sandwich, that's all right. And the people were getting up, and the voice said to this woman, get off the bus. The sound was here. It wasn't in the audience. Get off the bus. Get off the bus. And she refused. Now you catch the point. There was no reason why she shouldn't get off the bus. I would have. But at that point, she realized that she was being asked to do what was perfectly okay, except if she did it, she would be obeying the Spirit. And she refused. And it did not get possession of her. I think that really is the... I can only describe it by an example. I do not believe I should draw up a Talmud of what I can't defend, but I can describe the examples that we are familiar with, and you have to recall the different cases that might throw some light on the topic. Someone, yes, Mr. Thompson.
One of the brethren a while back, she would tell me that when she's no longer with the church at the time, right now, that someone was holding her down and she could not get up. You know, preoperatively, you know, she was trying to get out of bed or she would be laying on the couch or whatever and she wanted to get up, but she could not get up. And she realized that, you know, on both hands, someone was pinning her down. And, you know, she would just pray a little bit and then, you know, then she'd be able to get up later. And I've heard this from other brothers.
Yes, I've heard similar things. It was one of the problems, if you please, that Ted Armstrong had to wrestle with. I can only say, I can just describe what happened. I never asked those spirits. I have asked spirits questions, and they have answered in remarkable ways. As the one spirit said to me, this was one where Mr. Takach saw me having to deal with this person, and this person said that I don't think the person was much older than I was, a little, however. But the individual said, I, you know, am much older than you are. I was there, it said, when we were offered the opportunity to inherit the world, this earth. I was there. Now, they do talk. This same person later came to me, and while walking the person back to the... I usually try to get them out of the office as soon as possible and get them far enough away like Fair Oaks and bid them adieu where they could take a bus or somewhere and leave them. This person said, why are you... Now, I have to think of the way it was worded. Why do you not exercise freedom of will? You all are simply doing what God orders you to do. I said the issue is not a question of losing freedom of will if we obey God. We make up our minds whether we will. And the reason you see that we do is that those who do that out of free choice have willed to obey God. No. No, if you just keep doing His will, you lose the freedom of choice. It was an argument that he simply wanted to use. He knew better, but he wanted to use. This is, I saw some interesting things in their minds. Then there are cases where I couldn't possibly communicate. That is, they were irrational. In some cases, they were rational in the sense that they could communicate normally in English, even though the logic was warped. Now, back on other things, we're already at just past 9:30, so I'll draw this to a close. If you'd like to look at the pictures, ask Mr. Guisado. They're in his charge, and I appreciate seeing them. I would like to say that God did, I think, bless Ambassador to start with. Interestingly, no matter how many students we had, year one, year two, year three, you see, forget the fact that there was a local student who was part-time in the first year, but it was 4 and 7 and 12, the first 3 years. And that is, three were added, and then five more were added because you had 4 and 3 is 7 and 5 is 12. So the first year was 4, the next year was 3, and the next year was 5 new students. We had 1 year, then 2 years, then 3 years of courses, and my wife came in the fourth. I would like to say two things about first a student. Even though Mrs. Jean Michael no longer attends our fellowship, she didn't even know which college she was coming to, and she ended up that first year here because somebody knew that it was opening, and she just simply came among us without knowing which one she was really coming to from experience. I am grateful, one, that we did have a girl in those first 3 years. I am grateful that there was only one. And she had many friends. We all, I think, respected her. She behaved toward us appropriately. Her mother had stomach cancer later. She was not a frivolous person. She was a happy person. But I mentioned that because if you want to know what it was like socially, Mr. Armstrong had to dig up friends, let's say, of his daughters who might socially come. There was social life was simply, as you can see, a little different. But I think it was good. If it was all men, it wouldn't have been the same. It was an opportunity for everybody to simply work together, and we were all students at that time. Then, of course, the next year, I guess there were something like 19 when you came. It was interesting. 4, 7, 12, and 19, the fourth year. Now, that year was interesting because there were numerous girls, and one of the finest personalities, now deceased, in terms of what I would call spiritual thoughtfulness, was Mary Jo Burroughs, who married Mr. Dennis, Al Dennis. She was a roommate of my wife before we were married. And I would say I was pleased that my wife could help her and that she had the company, my wife did, of someone who had a spiritual intent. Because not everybody who came that year did. That was, I think, the beginning of the college really wasn't a college until the fourth year. It was simply developing into one. I could never say it didn't really begin until the fourth year, where you had a social life, student government, and the opportunity to become acquainted in a way that there were so many stresses those earlier years, three, with all these other problems. We acted as a team. I mean, Mr. Armstrong and the faculty that was loyal, we worked together. There was no question. And one, the other thing I wanted to mention is that Lucy Martin, later, after years she married, she never told us the background of her first husband, but I assume from what we know that he disappeared in some way in the war situation of World War II. So that was the past. She was a private woman. We didn't even know her religious convictions for years. But I would say that I told her later that I thought, in terms of personnel, that Lucy Martin was the most important decision pertaining to personnel that Mr. Armstrong ever made. Without her, from the first year, she stood by us in the second year. Now we do know where she had attended. She was a Blake Street, what is it, Presbyterian Church, the Congregational, one on Lake? Pardon? Yes? Yes. Which is it?
Congregational.
Congregational. All right, thank you. She was there. Mr. Armstrong made some very fine decisions. Even that English teacher was that we needed to have that experience. That's what we needed. So I never regretted that. That spirit got into her from when she went to India. And the spirit said, of course, that it's been paying taxes for so long a time. And we put together the fact that the taxes began to be paid when she went to India. The implication is the spirit was saying, how long it has been associated with a person who has to pay taxes. That is, she became possessed over there. Anyway, we needed someone from the first year to go for decades, and then we had others who lasted a long time. And Lucy Martin, as an academic person, a woman. So we had a number of women teachers, so it wasn't that it was just a male school. The history Spanish teacher was a woman. The English teacher was a woman. Lucy Martin was. Miss Hoover, was a church member. And also the other lady that I mentioned for Spanish and geography and history. Miss Hoover, a member, never survived the first year. Beyond the first year, a number of them quit. I mean, the thing was going to fold. You all know that. And so they walked away. Lucy Martin never did. And all those who came in the most strenuous periods, interestingly, came because they saw that Ambassador College stood for something unique in the field of education. And so I'm very grateful. I had the unusual experience. Well, I'll end with this, a nice note. I was given a chance to take some Thai teachers in the field of religion who had visited Fuller and came to him.
That they saw differences. I won't emphasize that. Fuller's has never been negative about us in terms of I had a library card there. I took a Greek program one summer, not for official credit. Lucy Martin, as we were going to the bus with the ties, I saw her, and I asked the Thai ladies, I think there were a few men, but they're mostly ladies, if they would mind that I would talk to the lady over there and her husband. And then I went to Mrs. Martin and I said, I would like you to introduce you to these Thai men and women who were visiting here. And then, so she walked toward me. Then I went ahead to talk to the Thai men and women who were interested in the field of religion, comparative religion in this case. And I said, this is my teacher. Now, I mean, so she was. For me to have said that to the Thais was the perfect expression expected of anybody who's Thai. I've learned that as I found that culturally I could find the right thoughts, the right words at the right time for that people. I had no problem also with communists in Russia. So, but I've found I'm awkward sometimes with other people. They said, this is your teacher. They were, you know, here I am, certainly by that time, I was probably 67, I think it's only a matter of some 3 years ago, something like that. And I was remembering my teacher in their presence to introduce her. That just astonished them. And then they walked up to her and the first thing they would ask is, how, you know, the un-American question, how old are you? Oh, I don't know. That's the perfect question a Thai asks, because the younger you are, the less wise you are. Lucy Martin had an interesting answer, which I won't repeat here, but they... publicly. It was a good answer, but we won't take the time. And then the Thais gathered around her and did what you only do for someone who is elderly. Remember, in Thailand, not only do you not touch other people in a public way, you men and women who are married in the Thai tradition did not touch one another. The only people you touched publicly were elderly people. And they all came and started to touch her. This arm, this shoulder, this hand, this heel. This was an astonishing thing. She had never been touched by so many people. But you see, I had their respect because the Thais do know me in the community. Even if they become first-time visitors, they've heard the story of different ones of us. And that we represent something unique that His Majesty and Her Majesty know about, and they see the difference. So I want to say that the faculty members all contributed, whether they were church members or not, and one of the greatest contributors of all was Lucy Martin. Many others should be included, but I'm including her because she's the only one from that first year who survived so long till her retirement. I want to thank the hostess, shall we say, in this case, and all of you for coming this distance. Use your judgment now. We'll be very careful about this water with these photographs, and I do appreciate it. I have never taken the time, and in all honesty, we probably have brought back the bulk of the photographs or photographic record that were things that were sent to Big Sandy. As far as I know, the things we don't want to sell when Big Sandy sells have been brought back and will be associated with the Ambassador's Center. I would say to anybody, so you understand, the Ambassador's Center is important. Whether we manage it as we might have, it is the custodial center for Ambassador Foundation, in part, and most certainly Ambassador College and University and the church. And that's where all the records are, so that as long as any student is alive, there will be a center that you can go to in terms of your academic record. And sooner or later, there will be opportunities, if you need to ask permission to study or just talk to Dr. Duke, Russell Duke. I don't know what the setup is. I've never been there. I should sometime like to be there just so that I can know. And there, I think, is something that we should not neglect in terms of the value that this continuity has. And as a board member of the university, we had to have some solution. Because if we didn't, it would have to be rest with the church. It's much better to rest in an academic center such as that. So may I then turn it back to you, and you can find someone whom you might like to...